Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Hello, everybody. It's been a little bit of time. The Milwaukee Bucks in the midst of the All-Star break. It has been an eventful All-Star break for the Milwaukee Bucks, both in and around the All-Star competition and elsewhere, which we're going to talk about. Lots of interviews. Maybe we'll have some fun with that. But once again, I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and I am joined by two Bucks reporting luminaries with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jim Ozarski, who is already on the road in Minnesota, ready to see this game against the Timberwolves on Friday night, and Lori Nickel, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And let's start with a vibes check. The second half is about to begin. Lori, I definitely want to hear from you because we haven't had you on in a minute. Where your head is at with the Milwaukee Bucks? They're 3-7 under Doc Rivers. I think there's clearly a little bit of stress going into the break, and maybe even coming out of it. It feels, I said on the last time we talked with Jim, a little bit of desperation based on some of the moves they're making, some of the way things are feeling. But how do you feel about this team, just blank check, going into the second half?
Throw that record out. Just throw it out. All right. Boys, they had the flu. They had pneumonia. They had meningitis. What? No, not that. What's the other one? So they took this horrible, horrible road trip that was so epic. I wrote about the NBA scheduling practices. You know, Chris got hurt. Brooke Lopez was on paternity leave, you know, and then he comes back and surprise, surprise, you don't come back from, you know, having a baby in your family and just like jump right back in. I mean, there's just so much stuff. And then, oh, they changed coaches three times, from the regular coach to the interim coach to the new coach, and pulled him off a golf course and said, go on this road trip. So to me, that record is just, it's a little bit of an edgy thing. It's something that should be a gut check for them. But to me, I don't count the record. As far as the vibe, I have questions for Jim. Like, have they really not practiced once? Is today the first practice on the whole break? To me, that's telling. I want to know how that goes and how, you know, with the first game back tomorrow. And, you know, we have a lot to play with here. With a lot of people on this team who talk now. So we have a lot of good stuff. Yeah.
Yes, it's true. Doc Rivers among them. It is very different from the Mike. It's different from Adrian Griffin. It's very different from Mike Budenholzer. We're talking night and day in terms of chatty head coaches. But Jim, I guess I will let you answer that question. I believe we're recording this on Thursday. It'll be the Bucks' first opportunity to practice. That doesn't seem unusual over a break like this. Obviously, several members of the organization were involved over All-Star break in Indianapolis. But what is sort of the schedule of things as we get back going here into Friday's game?
Yeah, Thursday is their only scheduled practice, you know, during this break. Malik Beasley, Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Doc Rivers, and the coaches all in Indianapolis. So, you know, they get back Monday. So they get a few days off, you know, and the team decided to not practice in Milwaukee, to just go right on the road and do it in Minneapolis. So, you know, we'll see, you know, can't predict exactly how long that's going to be. If this is Doc's one chance to get a fully rested group and they go 3 hours and they go live and just sort of whatever happens in the game Friday happens, because it's about this practice. Don't know that, but it's one of the few, you know, they did squeeze one in on the road during that road trip before they played Dallas. Coincidentally or not, led to a victory in Dallas. You know, maybe they get another one somewhere along the line before the week, you know, where the play-in tournament begins. So yeah, it's, you know, whatever they're going to install or do, they've got Danilo Gallinari with the team, their 15th person, and whatever, you know, they think he can add. So, you know, that'll be interesting. Now, in terms of the overall stuff, JR, yeah, it is a different group. To have, you know, a podcaster beyond Thanasis, especially one that's going to go back and forth with former teammates or Doc Rivers players. You know, Damian likes to talk. Doc likes to talk. So, yeah, it's the look, whether they start winning or not, I mean, people are going to have a lot to say, especially in that locker room.
Yeah, I do want to talk about some of the interviews and it's sort of like how serious are they or not. But just in general, Lori, to go back to, not to make vibes the center of our conversation here, but there is some drama around this team that wasn't there before, and that includes the addition of a guy like Patrick Beverley, who seems to be very happy here, and I don't want to suggest that he's going to create drama, but he is a agent of chaos. That's the guy that they brought in. If you look at PJ Tucker as the same type of player in 2021, that's worked for them before. But he's a different type of player and maybe a different type of personality. You've got the Doc Rivers situation. The change midstream is a big thing. And just in general, more people talking, more transparency, which is good for us, but maybe not necessarily how a well-oiled machine always works. So do you feel like the Bucks have courted this drama a little bit? Do you feel like maybe they've gone out of their way in the past to sort of keep this from happening, and now they're in a different place, a different level of desperation when it comes to their title window? Or maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe it's just they're looking for good players, and if those players are Patrick Beverley, or if the coach is Doc Rivers, we feel like that's what's going to get us to a championship. That's all that matters. How do you sort of sort through that?
Yeah, it's really interesting that, Doc Rivers is kind of old school, right? I mean, he is 62 years old. In press conferences, he barely lets most reporters finish their sentence. Like, he's in charge, yeah. He's going to answer the questions. He's going to tell you things, and it's his viewpoint of things. And I was reading an article about him that published in The Athletic before he took the Philly job. And one of the things that the former players there remarked on is that, Doc Rivers will call you out. He will tell you your role, and he will tell you in front of everybody. So it's very out there. It's not hidden. There's no game playing. I like that, actually, about Doc Rivers, about if that, I think basketball is a game of playing roles and knowing what you do and playing to your strengths and playing to the best. So if he's that kind of personality, that makes sense. The thing that was interesting to me was the Cabo statement. I think that was a little bit risky because he was so new to the team, and because, hey, man, you just got here. To say something like that is risky. It could go one of two ways. One, it could be a little bit of the direct sort of confrontation that maybe some of the people on this team need, or it could alienate some of the people on this team and players check down or they get defensive or whatever. And there's just not been enough time. The drama aspect of it, that was going to happen anyway. The drama was going to be introduced no matter who came in. It was just whether or not it was going to be, if we were going to get a front row seat to it or if we were going to hear about this months and months later. But if you can't fire a coach in January and not expect a lot of upheaval and a certain amount of drama. And again, it speaks to what their expectations were for this year more than it speaks to the type of people who are outspoken, at least to me.
Yeah. And like we said on the last podcast, even with the record being what it is, 3-7 going into the break with Doc Rivers, there has been improvement defensively. Now, we recorded that before the loss to Memphis, which, Jim, I got really frustrated a couple years ago about that loss to Houston, which I think was during the 2021 championship season, so it absolutely did not matter. But that loss in Memphis was bad against backups on a team that's bad to begin with, and they really struggled. So, yes, that Cabo comment, definitely, J.J. Redick definitely made note of it and caught a lot of people by surprise. But, oh boy, was that not what you wanted to see? Now, you were there for that, and you talked to Giannis afterwards and posted at jsonline.com all of Giannis's thoughts, some of them pretty introspective. Again, this is not unusual for him, but I won't say he called out his teammates, but he definitely questioned what needed to be done for the desire to win a championship, whether that was with him or with others. And, I think a lot of the pushback is Giannis doesn't, Giannis is having an MVP-like season. He's crushing people. It's not good enough in the context of team wins losses, but feels like Giannis shouldn't be the one calling him out. And yet maybe, I don't know, he's looking for more from his own leadership, I guess. So what I want to go back to that before we get to the actual All-Star break. What do you remember that what was that conversation's high point to you? What really stood out when you heard him say those things so late at night after that Memphis Grizzlies loss?
Yeah, it takes Giannis a long time usually to address the media post game when he does talk, and this one was a little bit longer. I mean, almost everyone was gone except for couple people. You know, he sat with Josh Oppenheimer for a long time. He sat with Thanasis for a long time, and clearly had this on his mind and something he wanted to say, which clearly was building beyond just, you know, a bad loss to the G League Grizzlies. And it was similar to the game in Houston, which was probably the beginning of the end, or hit the gas on Adrian Griffin's dismissal, when he was more angry in Houston with not knowing, saying we need to be coached better, we need to, you know, need direction, we need to know what we're doing. He also called out teammates effectively in that rant as well. This one was a little more measured, and just the do we want it element was very interesting. You know, to say to essentially say, like, we walk in feeling like we're going to win this game regardless, or we just need to wait to the playoffs and things will just happen because we're us and we're so talented. And it needs to begin a little sooner than that, which is interesting because Lori's been part of these post games where, especially when they lose, Giannis will say, well, I don't care if we win. Wins doesn't matter. You know, I've won 19 in a row. That doesn't matter. Or, you know, we've been the one seed and that doesn't matter. And then yet it does matter. Like, if they were 7-3, I don't know if he's sitting there telling us how much they want it, because he's seeing maybe some evidence to that. So yeah, losing to Miami and losing on Monday against the Nuggets, he had sat up on the podium and said, I wish he had a few more games before the All-Star break, because he thought things were going. So what changed in 3 days? Well, they lost badly to two teams that were understaffed, if you will. So, you know, I had asked them about, like, how do you, that's clearly, that's an intangible. How do you get teammates to do something like that, like play hard or want to win? And, you know, that's where he turned it on himself. It's like, well, I can't control that. All I can do is, you know, do more on his own part. So I think the vocal stuff, and he insisted that night that becoming a more vocal leader, he thought, has been important this year. And maybe saying these things publicly has been important for him to do, JR. So, I mean, averaging a career high in points, career high in assists. He's not a flawless player, and he recognized that. So again, I guess, you know, that's what he feels he should do. I guess we'll find out. Maybe he has like a 40-15-15 triple double against Minnesota and says, you know, this is what I got to do, and you all should follow. So, to Lori's point with Doc, like, clearly he felt that he could say that, he should say that. I think what's interesting to Lori's point, though, of will it work, is then he also is the guy saying, well, I didn't really think I should take this until the All-Star break, and I didn't think this was a good idea. And so,
meaning the job, Doc Rivers taking the job.
Yeah.
So maybe the messages have been mixed. We'll see. Some of these guys actually were pretty detached, so maybe none of them heard that. So, but that's to be determined, though, at least on that part of it.
I want to interject a little bit about that Doc Rivers soundbite, which, first of all, is just a soundbite. You couldn't easily find the rest of that interview, so I don't want to make it sound like, you know, without that context, I feel a little wrong commenting on it. I know certainly the rest of the internet commented on it. But what I don't believe him for a second when he says that he was hesitant about taking the job. And, like, no, you know, I don't know Doc Rivers, and I know he's trying to show professional respect for Adrian Griffin, and I can appreciate that. But come on, you don't, if you didn't want the job, or like even had hesitance to take over, two of the best players in the world with a very good championship window, you would not have done it. You wouldn't have left a very cushy ESPN situation. Of course he wanted the job. So I found that a little bit, that one did rub me the wrong way a little bit, but it is just one little clip. There's a bigger context, so I don't want to, you know, I don't know. Lori, you wanted to say something about
it. I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay. So about that, when I first of all, JR, you did a really great job. If people should go to JS Online and look at your wrap up of all the stuff that all the tea that was spilled on All-Star Break. But Jim, when Doc Rivers said, they shouldn't have fired AG. I don't know what they were thinking. He said this to the ownership and he said it on that podcast. One thing I thought of, did you ever report, I know a couple of outlets reported back in January that Doc was a consultant to the team. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you believe was true? Because it's something that Doc Rivers and GM John Horst denied. So that's my first question.
So yeah, that was, I could not independently confirm that. Obviously, you know, The Athletic is pretty well sourced and those are some folks who, you know, are generally pretty plugged in. But yeah, Doc Rivers was asked about that at his opening press conference. And the thing about that, Lori, that and Jared, that I'm interested in, is he was asked directly, you were an informal consultant. And then Doc says, I was never a consultant. And then yet said he has talked to Adrian Griffin. So, like, I don't know if that was one of those.
Something doesn't add up.
Playing with language there a little bit. Like, no, I wasn't a consultant, but yes, I talked to this person all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But you could see how then that makes things really awkward. Like, first of all, the coaching circle is tight in any sport and certainly in the basketball world. And, you know, if Doc Rivers took over the position for Adrian Griffin and was informing or helping or on the side talking or consulting unofficially and unpaid, as they made it clear in that press conference, you could see where now he would want to kind of exonerate himself or absolve himself of getting him fired. So that was the only thing that there's things we know and there's things we can speculate on. And this is pure speculation. But that was one thing that crossed my mind is like, if you want to be on good terms with your coaching fraternity, you know, you put it out there that, hey, I wasn't behind this firing in the first place or whatever he said that you had in your story, JR. So that was
just exactly right. And I think history is going to remember this as the right move. I believe that. I don't have, you know, like, who knows? That's just a take. I think history will remember this as the right move and as the move that the Bucks would have made in the first place if they had Damian Lillard when they hired Adrian Griffin. I think that they had Adrian Griffin coming into a very specific type of team. The team changed so dramatically with the addition of Lillard. And I think Doc Rivers makes probably more sense for this team and made sense in the moment, honestly. Like, he's got those Milwaukee ties on top of everything else. It seems like he was available. So I feel like he was the right guy at the time. If this team were what it was before the Lillard trade, I think Adrian Griffin seems like a perfectly good hire. So I think that's how history is going to remember this, is they had to change course. It would have been what they wanted to do in the first place. And it was ultimately the right move. But obviously the results are going to bear that out. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. Jim, I wanted to dovetail into the All-Star game itself, because what a weekend for Wisconsin and the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, it started with, like, Bo Ryan, Badgers, longtime Badgers coach, getting you know, as a finalist for the Naismith Hall of Fame. We had a couple guys in the Rising Stars game, Alondis Williams and Brandon Podziemski. I think I keep saying that wrong, but that was cool. Podziemski's having quite a year. That's kind of a cool story over in Golden State. And then obviously the big stuff. Damian Lillard wins the 3-point competition. He defends his title. Then he is the game MVP, albeit controversially, with hometown guy Tyrese Halliburton, Oshkosh native, having a really good game as well, continuing his ascent. So what's you were there for all that stuff. Great, great stuff from JSOnline.com, from Jim in Indianapolis. But, you know, rather I recapped it. There's, you know, it's an All-Star game. There's not a whole lot more to say, but, like, give me your highlights. Give me your two or three things that really stick out that you're going to remember from this experience.
Well, the first thing, and I wish it would have worked, but, I mean, Alondis Williams trying to dunk on Victor Wembanyama immediately.
Beautiful, though. Look, mwah.
You know, hey, he tried, he made the bucket, he missed the free throw, but, you know, he's like, the fact that it went in was still a small victory. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would have been a highlight for highlights of all year. So that was a good,
He would have immediately ascended to the NBA. Like, I know he's on a two-way contract with Miami now, but it would have immediately converted to full-time contract if you dunk successfully on Wemby.
So that was a good start. But that's not what people are going to remember. No. On a broader level. Yeah, I think, one thing that this, which I don't think anybody will see unless they're a diehard Pacers fan, that they're going to go and look at all of, like, the videos of these things. But for some reason, NBA PR, like, interrupted Tyrese Halliburton's post-game press conference. And then he like so much so that like they he's speaking, he's answering a question about the weight of being a franchise leader slash savior. Like it's a, and he's like into this like thoughtful answer about like, and it's, and it makes sense. He's in Indianapolis, right? It's like,
of course.
And then all of a sudden the staffer puts an extra microphone on the table and then puts a chair next to him and starts rearranging this stuff next to him so much that he stops and he's looking.
I didn't see this.
And he's like, I don't know what's happening. And then someone from the side goes, we're done. That's it. And Tyrese is thoroughly shocked and says, wait, wait, let me finish the answer. So he finishes the answer. And then someone says, we're done. He goes, I'm done. And they're like, yeah, you're done. And then he leaves. And so that was it. Weird. And no one asked like, hey, what did you think about not winning MVP? It was the, like of all the people to do that to. Well, I'm all sorry. That was wild to me.
Was it NBA PR or was it his PR? Because I got cut off too, asking some good questions about like the Bucks stuff when he was here in Milwaukee and being a Wisconsin guy. And he got cut off too. He's done talking or whatever. I'm like, he's a grown man. Can't he talk? Can he talk if he wants to?
I mean, it was a combination of this rearranging of the furniture. And yes, Pacers PR was next to him and shouted, we're done. But I guess I interpreted it as a, like he was just wildly disrespected and it's over and we're done with this. I don't know. That was wild. So JR, again, I have not yet answered your question.
No, this is great. I didn't know any of this. This is wild.
Those are the two fun, weird things. And then of course, yes, Damian Lillard winning 3-point on the last ball of the last rack. And you know, to win that a competition second year in a row. First one since 2008-09. One of, I believe, eight in the history of the competition to win two. And then to win the All-Star Game MVP, pulling up from half court twice, making them both. a couple 30-footers. So I think we'll see. We'll talk to Dame, and I'm sure if he drops 30 a night for the next week, we will hear how that, you know, smooths some things out or whatever. But I do feel like J.R. and Lori, I think he wanted to put on a show. I think while he was voted an all-star, he recognized he probably didn't earn that.
Mm-hmm.
And then therefore wanted to earn something and show something and remind everyone why he's special. And it's frankly things now the half court's probably exaggerated, but we haven't seen a ton of 30-foot Damian Lillard threes. You know, we haven't seen that. And now we'll see if that plays into the rest of the season. But that stood out to me as someone who wanted the thing. Look, when Giannis wanted to win it, it was clear he wanted to win it. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes these guys make a decision, and then everyone else sort of rocks with that. And maybe it was a little surprising that he stole it, as our colleague Greg Doyle wrote, from the Indy Star, from Tyrese Halliburton. But I don't know. Like, it was cool. We haven't seen that from Dame, really. And we'll see if it has any effect or if it was just a cool moment this season.
Yeah, I definitely got the same vibe that he wanted to put on a show. I mean, people need to remember this is the first time he was voted a starter. That had not happened in the Western Conference. So in the Eastern Conference, he gets that chance. Pretty clear that like Jalen Brunson or somebody could have started over him. You know, that there were certainly candidates to take that spot. I was actually surprised when he was named a starter. So I do think there was a little bit of like, let's not forget that I'm pretty good at this. I also, as far as the MVP goes, I loved Greg Doyle's column, and I love the fact that there's a new chapter in the Pacers-Bucks rivalry. I'm here for all of it. Let's go.
I mean, Dame was booed mercilessly after that. I mean, like, there were enough Pacers fans there. I mean, they booed him during the three-point. They booed Malik. Like, they booed, yeah. I mean, Doc was booed. Giannis was booed. Yeah, I mean, Pacers fans like spent the money. They that was not a corporate crowd.
No, I love it. Great. It's good stuff. It reminds me of 2011 when Prince Fielder in Arizona chose his teammate Ricky Weeks to be in the home run derby. And then there was Justin Upton of the Diamondbacks, the hometown guy who was not selected. And oh boy, were there boos. And then Prince Fielder went on to win the MVP of the All-Star game the next day. It was crazy stuff. It felt spiritual successor to that. I think also the award, I think, is kind of decided upon in prior to the end of the game. Halliburton had a couple buckets close to the end of the game that I think brought his point total pretty close to Lillard's. He was still like the third leading scorer on his team, but like he was over 30, but he wasn't over 30 when I think they maybe voted on that. Happened to Kareem once. He should have won an NBA All-Star game. Nobody remembers who wins NBA All-Star game. No one cares. But Indiana Pacers fans, they care, and it's going to be fun. Laurie, I'm going to ask you also about Damian Lillard just in the second half, and if him being good is kind of the only ingredient that really matters here, you know, that you already have Giannis being at this level, they've pulled up defensively, maybe it's just about Damian Lillard, period. But before we do that, the All-Star game in general, there were a lot of conversations about how it's gotten out of hand. No defense. Team scored 200 points, 211 points. That was obliterated the previous single-team record. I'm curious what you think. I lightly made fun of that because ultimately it's an All-Star showcase and I just truly don't care. If guys are out dunking all day long, that's cool. That's fun. My kid loves it. My middle schooler loved this game. He was talking about it through Tuesday, all the dunking and the half-court shots and stuff. But there was no defense. That is not hard to dispute. What do you think about it? Where are you at with the All-Star game?
You mean me?
Yeah. You, yeah, how do you feel about it?
I barely watched. I had it on as wallpaper while I was cleaning my house. I wanted to see how Dame did. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're eighth grader, middle schooler, that's the target audience.
That's fine. What I think too.
And that it's a party for the people who did well in the NBA. So that's all I take it. I take none of it journalistically. And actually, you know, again, I'm the mom of this podcast. I wish everybody could have had more time off to rest and get off their legs. So I don't love it. I don't hate it. I don't care. But I wasn't interested in any of that stuff.
I maintain the 2020 way was fine. It had an Elam ending. You know, there was pandemics. Well, actually, 2020, that was before the pandemic, so never mind. But one quarter of basketball was so elite. They did their three quarters. They paid tribute to Kobe Bryant with this Elam ending, and it was incredible, high level. You'll never see it again, All-Star basketball. That's what you want. I want three quarters of them dunking and flying and taking half-court shots and one quarter of awesomeness, and I don't know why we got away from that. I don't know why that's too complicated for people to appreciate. I feel like that's the way to do it. But I don't know. Jim, real quickly, how do you feel about the All-Star game? You were there. You saw it. Is it as disastrous as people make it out to be?
No. And again, I don't quite understand – you know, the hand wringing over this. I mean, now look, the commissioner sets a tone, and for a year, the commissioner has sort of predicted more competition, and he frankly pouted on national television when he handed Giannis the award, like, oh, the East, you won. Here you go. And like walked off.
211 to 186, I guess.
So like, I have a hard time. So like when the commissioner is trying to sell this thing to whoever media partner, whichever media partner for something would it be, like, I get that. But from, I'm with Lori, like, it's not for me. I don't think it's for the hardcore basketball fan. And so if the LED screen that made, you know, the players green was appealing to some folks, like, great, you know, it's an All-Star game. I mean, the NFL moved to flag football finally, right? Like, Sean Taylor's not there, you know, right, Decleating punters, you know, like the Elam ending. You're right, JR, like, that was fun. And maybe if it was within a score, it would have been cool the last couple minutes. But yeah, I don't know. I don't quite get the hand wringing either. It's an exhibition game.
Yeah.
And the league sets it up like it's Super Bowl, and all of the players who are involved in the game, though, are the ones doing all the product pitches and the parties. It's not like the Super Bowl where all the other teams show up,
right,
and do all that stuff, because, you know, the Chiefs and the 49ers are sequestered in their hotel. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not doing that stuff.
That's a really
right?
good point. Yeah.
Giannis and Dame were like, I don't know what they were doing, but they were doing a whole lot of other stuff that had nothing to do with anything than their own pockets. So, like, am I shocked that they were, like, wiped? No. So, yeah, I don't know, JR. I disagree from our basketball brethren who just seem to really care about this, because it's not for us. It's really not for the players in a lot of ways. So, it's fine.
Yeah. Sidebar, Adam Silver has some, according to some reporting yesterday, some new stipulations for cities to host the All-Star game. Milwaukee, of course, we hope is in the future plans, even though, you know, they missed out on this last cycle. But Now they need three five-star hotels. Milwaukee does not have five-star hotels. What is going on? What do you need those for? We're about to host the Republican National Convention, and now you need hotels and X number of flights flying to our airport? Just hold it in Los Angeles every year, Adam, if that's what you want. I don't understand that. And they've got to work around it because they're not just going to not give it to Milwaukee after all of this. Like, at some point, Milwaukee's getting an All-Star game. He said that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's... I don't know. I mean, Indianapolis doesn't have 3 5-star hotels. Neither does.
No, but they won their bid before this like new stipulation. So
yeah, yeah.
Maybe someone complained about the room service downtown Indianapolis.
Yeah, put it this way: there are not enough NBA markets that fit those parameters. Just briefly here, and also a lot of those cities that don't want to host the thing all the time.
Right.
Like, in order to have it, you must want it. And, you know, not all these places want it. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. That's fine. Good reporting by our colleagues down at the Oklahoman, because Oklahoma City is dumping more public money into their arena to fix it up. So they got some details on that. And, I mean, maybe it punts Milwaukee down the line here, but I don't see how, you know, that prevents the city from getting it at some point.
Yeah. All right, Lori, I'm coming back to that question about Damian Lillard. It feels to me like we've talked about a lot of the ways that the Bucks have backslid compared to previous iterations of this team, specifically defensively. And yes, their lineup has changed a little bit. But I wonder if it is simpler than that. Damian Lillard has occasionally been the star player. And then there are games where he's just not himself. And whether it's like a comfort thing or whether it's a fit with the other guys on the court, I don't know. But like he's not Damian Lillard, you know, the future Hall of Famer right now. He's just a very, very, very good player. And I wonder if that difference is the difference in the Bucks being a championship contender or not. Right now, I don't think they're anywhere close to the Celtics. I don't think they need to be this second. But do you think it's as simple as saying if Damian Lillard is his, like, best version of himself, the Bucks are going to be contending for a championship, easily contending with the Celtics for the Eastern Conference? How do you feel about that?
I don't think it's that simple. I think it's really, really complicated because we're asking a very established player to change how he plays. And when he plays defense, he can no longer, excuse me, he can no longer just like shadow a guy or be in his face or even contest. Like, if you're going to play the kind of defense that Giannis likes and that previous Bucks teams have been known for, it's spots, it's funneling people from the perimeter down to Giannis and Brooke in the paint. It's about establishing positions on the floor. It's about being really physical and moving people out of the way, meaning the opponent. And, you know, every time I've seen Damian Lillard play and I just focus on him and his defense, he seems like a very willing participant. It's just not the kind of defense that has kind of the standard has been set here in Milwaukee with two really elite players in the back with Giannis and Brooke Lopez. And then with the really good perimeter defense that they've had over the years with Wes Matthews and with, of course, Drew Holiday.
And so, Eric Bledsoe even. Eric Bledsoe's a good defender.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, I forgot about him. So that takes a toll. Playing that kind of defense takes a toll on your offense. That's part number one with Lillard. The other thing is, you know, again, I get back to playing roles on this team. And there was a point in that Chicago disaster. I don't know if you remember, Jim, but we were down there. We went together at the end of December, and the Bucks lost, and they lost pretty badly. I really think Damian could use Chris Middleton on the floor more often. There was a play at the end of the game where Chris was trying to direct traffic, and he was trying to tell people where to go. Chris was doing what Chris does. If you watch Chris and Giannis over the years, they're talking on the bench. They're still talking when they come on the court after an ATO. They're always talking. Chris Middleton was talking to Damian Lillard, and Lillard walked off and walked to the bench because it was a timeout, and Lillard was frustrated. What's the call? I really think that's not anybody's fault. When I asked Chris about that, Chris was like, you know, time and place. I need to get to know him. I need to know when I can talk to him about things and when I need to back off, let him do his thing. That's something that Giannis and Chris Middleton worked out years ago, you know, in 2015, 2016, Lillard is thrown in here. What was it, September or something? I mean, it was really last minute. He's trying to blend in. The expectations are different. You know, this is supposed to be where he gets his ring. And so you have all these other expectations. I don't see how that cannot take away from the offensive end. And then we could do a whole podcast about how his offense blends and complements what they already have here. And he often mentions that there's two alphas in the room. Well, how does that work? Usually you don't have two alphas, you know? So how does that work with him and Giannis? I cut them all a bunch of slack in this area because just as they were getting things going, they fire the coach and they change things, and meaning getting things going a little bit between Giannis and Dame. And then there's this upheaval. I think we're all still wondering where the pick and roll thing is, this magical pick and roll that was supposed to happen. I swear I see it more with other guys than I see with those two. So yeah. That's why I asked you, Jim, about practice. You know, is this really their first practice back? How are they going to pull this together? They're great players and everything, but I cut them a lot of slack. It isn't as easy as it seems, as Dame does Dame and Giannis does Giannis, and everything works out perfectly if they just play top of their game. Yeah. Basketball is still a game of role playing. The bench has to help, there's support, and they're still figuring it out.
Jim, I want you to weigh in on that as well. And we can work in more about Middleton because he's hurt right now. We don't know when he's going to be back, presumably. I don't know if you have any sense of what that timetable would be. But that's also, you know, Damian Lillard can go back to that all-world player, and Chris Middleton still probably needs to be here for the Bucks to win a championship. So give me your thoughts on this.
I mean, really quickly on Chris, you know, stepped on that ankle or the foot of Kevin Durant on February 6th as we record this. It is February 22nd. So, I mean, look, when it happened, Giannis thought maybe that Philadelphia game coming up, maybe there's that home game against Charlotte the 27th. You know, we don't know. You know, the Bucks, when they choose to not say anything, things are not said. So we'll see if Chris is here. That'll be a big step, whether and then if he practices, you know. But he wasn't in any sort of walking boot after the fact. He wore it out of Phoenix, but it was still a pretty good sprain when he stepped on Durant. And, you know, we'll see if he's going to be able to get going here and then maybe ramp back up a little more quickly than we're used to seeing Chris Middleton ramp up. And, yeah, he is important. Yet again, JR, we're on a podcast talking about how important Chris Middleton actually is to them doing the thing they want to do. And he does make life easier for Damian and Giannis in this way. But Laurie is 100% right. It is more complicated than just, you know, as Giannis has been wont to say very often, we want Dame to be Dame. But that's not, like, I don't know if the Bucks would be cool with Dame being Dame, meaning taking three or four 35-footers off the bounce, you know, 7 seconds into a shot clock, right? And who knows? Maybe we'll see it. Maybe they do want that or didn't know that they wanted it, and he's going to have to start doing some of that to get himself in a different space. You know, yeah, there isn't practice time. And Doc said, you know, that his essentially 2 weeks on the bench, these shoot-arounds have been practices to a degree. They've gone much, much longer. Yeah. Giannis and Memphis had said, and at the All-Star break had said, it's been draining, you know, to have these really extended shoot arounds where they're doing some more stuff. Then they have to play a game. You know, maybe they're just exhausted mentally, physically a little bit to play some of these games. Doc admitted he probably couldn't do that much longer. So we'll see. We'll see if what he says, that time has come, you know, where those shoot arounds can't be that long. Now, I will simplify it a little bit because I can't add much to what Laurie said. When it comes to the playoffs, the Bucks will have the two best players on the court at any given time in the Eastern Conference. And while all of those things are true, if it's a close game in the final 3 minutes, whether they're running two-man pick and roll or not, they're still Damian Lillard and Giannis. And no one has anything for them. Yeah. And so, and maybe it looks like the Griffin stuff in the sense of, you know what, Dame, we can't have you play hard defense because we need you to make to score 12 points in the fourth quarter. And I think that's still something they're struggling with. You know, Laurie has written a couple times about Malik Beasley's efforts on defense, and that's true. And like Malik has to try, and Dame has to try, but at some point Malik can't go 1 for 9. If they want to go to the finals, he can't go 1 for 9 from three. And does that mean he can't try as hard? Like, that's when they did this, they did this. And that's, I think, what they have to figure out is to be a little better, which they have become, but then not be so, you know, not lose the specialness on offense, which they leaned into. So, again, that's all to be seen. And to a degree, JR, it is as simple as can Dame make 43% of his shots and 39% of his threes, which we haven't really seen yet. Some of it is that, and some of it is Giannis just being continuing to be, you know, the best player in the Eastern Conference. So it's a little bit of, it is that simple, to Lori's point of it's not that simple. And I guess that's why you hired Doc Rivers with, you know, 36 games left to figure that out.
Getting close to getting out of here, Jim. I feel like we should at some point mention Danilo Gallinari, who was signed. good discipline by us, I feel like, to maybe wait until 40 minutes have gone by. No offense to Gallinari, who averages like 8 points a game, 8.3 points per game or something with Detroit this year. He's not the player that he was a few years ago. And we've seen this team sign guys, you know, who've been bought out before, and they haven't really done a whole lot. You know, no, some guys, Marvin Williams was okay. I don't know. Is there any reason, like, when are we going to see him? In what role, I should ask, if any, like, I don't know. Is there anything to know about Danilo Gallinari, I guess?
Yeah. Look, I think 15th person was only playing 15 minutes a game this year in Washington and Detroit, blew out his left ACL for the second time in his career 2 years ago. I think he had signed with Boston, right? And it's been several years, 2018-19 with Doc Rivers, 20 points a game in 30 minutes as a full-time starter, mm-hmm. long time ago, especially when you're 35 coming off your second ACL. Look, I don't know if he was on a minutes restriction with that 15 per game. I do know he wanted to play for Doc again, and he feels like he's going to play more than 15 minutes a game. So that will be interesting to see whose minutes he takes. He doesn't play defense anymore. He shoots threes still at a pretty decent rate. So that's a thing. So, yeah, we'll see. Maybe if Chris is going to be out for a little bit, there's still some room for him. I mean, he's a stretch big. He's 6'11 or 6'10, and he's going to shoot threes. He's not a rebounder. He's not a defender. He's just – some people don't really call him a three-point shooter so much as he was a scorer back in the day, and those are two different things. So I guess we will find out. But generally speaking, yeah, like, you know, he could be a guy who helps them get to the playoffs and then maybe plays a role in a series somewhere, but yeah, Pat Beverly was the guy they went out to get to make a tangible, really impact. Direct impact on the stretch run. In the playoffs.
All right, Laurie, coming back to the biggest picture possible, I'm feeling like this is the Bucks' last chance. And I think that's probably pessimistic because obviously we know Giannis is going to be here beyond this year. So it feels like there should be a chance, but to me, it still remains to be seen if Damian Lillard is going to be happy here, is going to fit here, you know, and want to stay in Milwaukee. I mean, even if he's under contract, like that doesn't mean that he's going to stay in Milwaukee. I don't know about the supplementary pieces. The fact that their draft capital is just so drained, you know, I think what did we say? 7 years before they have a real first round draft pick again. Like I feel like we're at the edge of a precipice, and that goes back to what I said earlier. Is there a whiff of desperation in bringing in Doc Rivers and going out and courting some drama because we can't have any, you know, safeguards anymore. We got to go for what we've got here. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if that's pessimistic. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like we are approaching maybe the end of a Bucks era, or do you still see sunlight for what's to come, the years beyond this, and it isn't all about just what happens in 2024?
I don't know if I can answer that question the way you want me to, a yes or no.
Sure.
But I will say this. I covered the Bulls just before the Last Dance, you know, and there's some similarities now to me that I keep going back to that with the Doc Rivers era beginning here. Back in the mid-90s with the Bulls, you know, Jordan was everything, right? He was oxygen to the brain. He was, yeah, he was everything. Mm-hmm. And then there were really specific role players on that team. Pippen was the bucket getter. You know, Dennis Rodman was the monster and the rebounder. And he was made, you know, getting 8 points a game cool in the NBA. He had a role, okay? And then, you know, Steve Kerr was the outside shooter, Bill Cartwright, whatever. But the guy I remember too, and I wish I remembered more, I was really young, believe it or not, but Phil Jackson kind of had this calming presence to him. He accepted everybody. He really meshed those roles well together. And I just remember, again, very limited, but when Phil Jackson spoke, people listened. And it was a cohesive kind of presence with him. To me, that's the question with Doc Rivers. Without looking forward or looking at what's happening next year or any of that, I can't even do that. To be honest with you, I can't. To me, I'm so locked in to this really special group that they have right now. This is so unusual for Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And people who are here know that, you know, like we don't get this all the time, even though we've had MVPs in other sports and we've been very lucky. This is kind of a golden era for the Bucks, and I'm locked into what could happen in the next several months. And can Doc Rivers at his age pull these different personalities together? Can he get more out of his bench? Can he get the young guys engaged and feeling like they have an active role in the bigger picture? And can he get Giannis and Damian Lillard to and Chris Middleton, the big four, the big five, whatever you want to call those guys, get them to play off each other? To, I want some moxie and some fight to them. I have been kind of stunned with how much, you know, the Bucks are not the NBA darlings right now. They are not liked by other teams at all. And it's not just Miami that doesn't like them.
It's spicy.
And it's not just Indianapolis that doesn't like them. Utah hates them. You know, Memphis was jacked to beat them. Boston, of course, you know, everybody wants to take a swing at the Bucks. Where's the, you know, the alpha kind of, you know, you're not doing that to us stuff. You need that with the calming presence of the coach and the 95 assistant coaches that they have.
Have a lot. Yeah.
I'm looking at, if we're talking Last Dance and parallels and similarities, I'm looking for a couple of times Doc has said in press conferences, look, we need to make a decision. Our defense has to be clarified. We need to decide this, like enough talking. We need to do this. I kind of like that leadership. I'm kind of interested in how it'll play out. And, you know, the fact that they're all in, all the chips are into this season, I'm totally willing to see, you know, I don't want to look at the cliff right now. I don't want to see the waterfall that's coming that we're going to go over. I want to see, I'm really interested in what happens now.
Yeah. I mean, to say they're in a Last Dance, JR, implies that they even made it to the ball. And this Bucks team has not. I mean, this current iteration, this isn't a Last Dance. This is the weird do you want to dance thing, and is the partner, the person you ask, going to say yes? I mean, look, they failed the last, I don't, whatever Giannis wants to say, they failed the last 2 years. They didn't get to the prom, you know, after doing that. And so, you know, that's why John Horst did the things he did. And ownership to swing for Damian Lillard and, you know, try Adrian Griffin and then try Doc Rivers. So it's not desperation because you have Giannis. And that type of player always changes the calculus and the way you treat draft picks and free agency and luxury taxes, et cetera. You know, so I to Lori's point, I don't really think you can look at the 2031 draft or 2030. It is about this year. And then I think this summer, however it goes is maybe how you decide or you answer that question. Like, if they lose in the second round, does ownership say, well, we spent 300 something million dollars the last 3 years and have nothing to show for this?
Yeah.
We gave you a shot. It's over. And after 6 years of being a championship contender, could we blame? I mean, they would get blamed, but you could sit there and say, well, that makes sense. They're tired of this. Or if they win it all, you know, and they're like, all right, well, let's just figure out the rest of the roster around these big four or big three or whoever's left after that. So, yeah, I don't think it's a last dance of sorts, because they just they were Cinderella. They ran out. To Lori's point, everyone, they were the toast of the NBA and the small market and the superstar who stayed. And, you know, mm-hmm. they fought their way through the playoffs and they kind of did it the right way. Right, JR and Lori? Yeah. And then now they're a team that's underachieved. And to loop it back to the beginning, they've got personalities on the team that aren't, that have built legacies and opinions elsewhere. Dame for a dozen years. Doc for 25 years. Pat Bev for 10 years. And all these other places. So now it's just they're dealing with that, because that's what happens when you're not a homegrown, when you are sort of piecing together parts and things from other areas. Like it's different. And so, yeah, hard to look ahead. But I do get you, JR. I mean, it does feel like if this fails, drastic change could be in the offing. Mm-hmm. But maybe just getting to the finals and losing is enough. And they sort of run it back and realize, well, year two of all of this, it's going to look a lot better. Look what we did last year when it was so dysfunctional. Yeah. You know, what if it's normal, or as normal as it can be? And if it's a second round and out, you know, I think anything's on the table. But I don't know if that adds to this year. Like, I don't think the players are thinking that, at least if they are. Like, Chris, all I'll say is Chris has admitted he thought about that. The championship year against Brooklyn, like, is this over? Chris wondered this summer when he didn't resign and Brooke was a free agent, are we, like, is ownership going to decide 2 years of this was enough? So I'm not so ignorant and naive to think players don't think bigger picture, but they're in it. Like, it's not like they're in it. Like, I don't know if maybe Dame's wondering about his summer and his future. But I don't think that's detracting from what he's trying to do right now, because he has to be in the situation. So yeah, I don't know. I guess it's not answering it as cleanly as yes or no. But
no, that's right.
Lori's point. It's complicated, but it'll make these next 26 regular season games and maybe 2 months of playoff basketball really fun.
If a teenage TikTok influencer asked me who is in my dream top five of podcast partners, of course, I would say Jim Ozarski and Lori Nickel are on that list. You can find everything they have at jsonline.com as they cover this team. Down the stretch, down those last 26 regular season games, Minnesota Timberwolves will get it started on Friday night. That's a game on ESPN. It's on CBS 58. It's on local. It's on WMLW. First of 10 games are going to be on over-the-air broadcasting for the first time in a hot minute in well over 10 years. So that's interesting. Some new audience possibly coming in to check out these Milwaukee Bucks. Thank you for tuning into this edition of the Point Forward podcast. We will be back with you very soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast. A Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.